this new character to me, we'll call her not Zia, has,
wait, that doesn't sound good.
Let's not do that. That's not my best name.
Captain Spot, Stardate 192435.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, I told her to take time off, and she threatened to delete my program. It's Ambassador Danae.
I think I would just take time off.
I knew that was going to be your response, because now I get to tell people that, yeah, I offered her time off, and she wouldn't take it. But you would. You would 100% take that time off.
Yeah. If there was no ramifications for me taking time off,
I wouldn't be angry. I would be disappointed.
I would still do it.
Yeah.
That's
not a
you.
Ramification.
Your disappointment is your own stuff. That has nothing to do with me.
That's fair. Speaking of ramifications, so this week we're doing Take Me Out to the Holosuite. And I made the bold claim that this would be a good introductory episode. To get people into Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
I was lambasted by several emailers saying, "Are you fucking high? What are you talking about?"
No.
And they pointed out some specific reasons why this is a terrible introductory episode to Deep Space Nine. So I'm glad it's not your introduction.
It's not, because my first introduction was also a terrible
introduction. Was also terrible, yep.
Because that was the episode... This is great, because if we have anybody who's starting to listen to Captain's Pod and hasn't heard this episode, this is one that...
This is an all-timer.
Yeah, and I don't know from the fans' perspective what our all-time episodes are.
I mean, for me it's one that I firmly remember, and I feel like that should mean something.
Yeah, because we watched Deep Space Nine.
Looking for Pachmach in all the wrong places.
So that I could watch more of Worf.
Yes.
But it turns out he married a bitch.
Didn't.
She's horrible.
In that episode.
I mean, just like such disrespect. thinks so highly of herself. She shits all over like the traditions. And I'm watching this episode like, okay, I'm just going to talk about how I feel. And I remember when I shared my very strong feelings about Jadzia, who I remember her name because I don't like her.
This is the person that does not remember.
Yeah.
Period.
Like, Worf is one of my favorite characters. So when you show me this person who, like, great, yeah, she's a strong female, but she's also suit, like, it was just a really hard episode for me to watch, going, man, this is not who I would expect Worf to, like, want to be with. What is it about her that, anyways.
She's bitey.
Blah, blah, blah. We're live on the show. I say my thoughts and feelings about Jadzia, and I just remember the chat.
It was I think it's my all-time favorite live chat moment. They all just went, oh, no. Oh no. And then like a couple of people were like, no, Jadzia is the best. But what I love is the backlash wasn't against you. It was Ian, you dick. What have you done?
100%.
You've ruined any opportunity of her loving Jadzia, who is a great character.
I'm the one that's just shitting on the show and this character that they love, and they're blaming you. It was fantastic.
Absolutely fair.
But the part was, oh no, Danae. I think maybe, I can't remember who said it. I'm pretty sure it was Slab. Actually, it was all of them. But it was like, you don't know what you've just done. Kind of like almost concern for me that in releasing this episode, I was going to become the focal point of fan hate.
Yeah, because the live show is a small percentage of our overall listenership. So I think those in the live show were like, oh no, the people that download this at home, are they going to be mad at Danae? But we didn't have a single email. They were all aimed at me saying, you did this to Danae.
That was an all-timer episode. So then my next introduction to any of the Deep Space Nine characters was on our time travel series, where it was like the Tribble episode.
Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah. And that one I got to see a bit more of Jadzia, and I was like, okay, I can kind of feel like, okay, I kind of like her. Because everyone's like, no, Danae, you'll love her. You'll love her. She's like you in a way. And there's some similarities there.
She really is.
And I just wasn't seeing it. And then I did a little bit. So I'm kind of curious today what it's going to feel like.
Well, the cool thing is that Jadzia isn't in this episode.
Oh, good.
So
that's good. I like
but that does link back to one of the multiple reasons why a couple of people emailed and said this was a terrible episode to introduce people to Deep Space Nine, but I don't want to get into
the judge of that.
Exactly. I don't want to get into those because they are spoilery. I will have some explaining to do at the top of 10 forward, because you're going to have a couple of questions, but that's why we love this show.
That's
is why
part of the
we
show.
Love doing it.
Yeah.
Just go in blind.
We go in just
I will not answer any questions until we get to 10 forward. I know one specific question you're going to have, okay. And we'll just get it out of the way at the top of 10 forward. But yeah, so join us now as we head over to the holodeck to watch Deep Space Nine, Season 7, Episode 4. Take me out to the holosuite, and we'll see you in 10 forward for a full debrief. Do you know any baseball lingo?
Two to knock out.
Yeah.
Two to home, fly ball.
Home run us.
Two to home run us.
Home run us to the 10 forward.
Two to walk.
To the dugout. It's a thing.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first. What is your thing of choice from the replicator, Ambassador?
I want drunky gum, please.
Scotch gum.
I don't know if I want scotch.
Uh-huh. You don't want scotch.
But I think I want a grasshopper martini gum.
That's so oddly specific.
Well, yeah, it's one of my favorite martinis.
I love that.
It was like one of those moments when you order a martini that you're like, I think I like all these things. I like Bailey's. I like mint. I like chocolate.
Grasshoppers?
I don't know why they called it a grasshopper. I have no idea. But I was initially like, no, I'm not going to have a grasshopper martini. And then I read the ingredients and I thought that sounds really good. And that was the jumping point for me drinking what some of my friends refer to as frou-frou alcoholic beverages.
Because it has a lot of fancy stuff in it. It's a frou-frou?
Yeah, it's like a frou-frou.
That's
thing.
Amazing. You want some frou-frou
gum.
Sorry,
did you just say mint and chocolate? That shouldn't be.
Is that? That's not frou-frou. That is not what we're here to talk about. Stop it. Alcohol pod. No, I would, of course, I want that baseball that's signed by the entire cast that's still around in season 7 of Deep Space Nine. I want that ball. I know it's out there. I know it's still probably in Milton Keynes somewhere, just in an exhibit that that exists.
Where
yeah, look that
is
up.
The
it's baseball. Got to be there somewhere.
Space Nine. Yeah, I don't know. It didn't pop up. Where's the holosuite ball? That's a good one to put. Let's not look that up right now. Carry on.
Oh, I bet Ira Stephen Baird does have it. I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure he does. Okay. Anyway, give us a synopsis, Ambassador, for an episode dedicated to your favorite thing of all time.
So. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to watch Star Trek characters play baseball? That's the only reason to watch this episode.
Lies. Sorry, I usually let you finish.
Oh, if you really want to see racist Vulcans, this is the one for you too.
Yes.
Oh, and if you wanted to know that Jadzia is finally dead, this is it too. I think. Is she dead? She's dead, right?
Yeah, she's dead. Yeah. That's the That's the only way that happens. Overall thoughts and feelings.
Mm-hmm. So this was a hard one for me because I don't enjoy watching sports in real life. I don't like watching sports on TV shows. I don't usually enjoy like the buildup of the game and who is going to win and all that stuff is not something that I'm usually like really motivated by.
Agreed. Same here.
So I look for other things to sort of enjoy. And it turns out that like Sisko is more of an asshole than Jadzia ever was. So now, like this episode revealed to me that I can like let that, like the number one spot of my least favorite Deep Space Nine character is like full on Sisko now. So that's new.
Oh no.
And like, so what an unrelatable, horrible person he is. For so many reasons. And so that was interesting to be like so angry watching this one, like not be into the baseball, not be into a lot of like the plot. But then also like really try to find something to enjoy. And I think I discovered it in the spirit of the show.
Yes.
I was really reaching for that going, this is so fun to watch these characters wear their uniforms on a field. And this is so interesting because, you know, Worf is playing baseball and I've always wanted to see what Worf looks like in a baseball
You haven't. You
costume.
Don't have to lie.
And this is what I'm doing in my brain. I'm like, this is okay. But there was a few moments that I really did enjoy that certainly are like character related. This is the Rudy episode of Star Trek.
Rudy?
Yeah. There's
What's
a
Rudy.
It's a movie.
Okay. Rudy the movie?
Yeah.
Is it about baseball?
No. Anyway, yeah. What about you?
Okay. Yeah. I get it. In this one specific instance, Sisko is a dick and he's horrible, but the show does do a good job of explaining why and gives him some redemption at the end. So I think they do go very super duper hard on making him an ass in this episode and then roll it back to serve the story. The barrier to entry on this episode is high because I'm not a big baseball person either. I'm not a baseball person at all, but I really, really love this episode. I think it's one of the funnier episodes of Deep Space Nine. And I really, really love the journey that the entire crew goes on through this sporting metaphor team building thing. And I think the end is super satisfying. There's a lot that I really, really, really love about this episode. But as soon as we sat down to watch it, you're like, oh fuck, it's baseball. Do you know how much I hate baseball? And I was like, no, I don't actually. So I knew we had a bit of an uphill struggle, but did you pull a lot of Star Trek out of it? Did you find any love in it despite your hatred of baseball? Did you manage to engage at all?
This is the least Star Trek episode I've ever seen.
That's fair. It is. No, it's not.
Okay.
It has a philosophical basis. It does have a message in it, and that's very Star Trek. I think the message behind this is super Star Trek.
Let me be specific. Message-wise, I'm not thinking about that. I'm talking about like being in the world of Star Trek.
Oh, for real?
This is the least Star Trek I've ever seen. You get to still see some of Deep Space Nine, and you get to see them like in these different sets. I could tell the cast was having a fun time with this one. That's part of what I enjoyed about it. Like when I was mentioning the specific things I loved, Odo in this one, fantastic.
Oh, Odo's incredible. Oh my gosh.
He and Worf are my two favorites.
Death to the opposition.
I really liked their take on it, like the character. Since I don't really know the rest of them very well, even like O'Brien, of course, I know O'Brien a little bit more than the other characters as well. So kind of seeing them sort of sink into it and get into it and sort of understanding the character, like the motivation that this crew is doing this. And then there was some, David mentioned in the chat that there is a, I can find it real quick. For the context, this was a fun side quest that was in the middle of a Dominion war. So I think I'm understanding or remembering that Deep Space Nine was more of a series show instead of an episodic show.
Correct.
And there is a really intense war going on, which is referenced at the beginning of this episode. And so this is sort of a way for them to do something new. So as a viewer, if you've been watching a lot of intensity, I think this would be a really relieving episode to watch because it sort of reminds you about the fun that can happen in storytelling. And it's not always like super serious. And I think that's a like something to really give weight to. It wasn't that I wasn't having a good time. It was more just that like, it's not one that engaged me. Mm-hmm. I was more watching it to talk about it on the show, which is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I get it. I know everything I know about baseball. I know from this episode of Star Trek. Like many things in my life, I've learned them because of Star Trek. And this is the most, I think, 21st century episode or 20th century episode of Star Trek that they ever did. Like, there's not just, like, references. You are immersed 100... This is basically a time travel episode because they are living in 1998. One of the interesting things is that it aired during the 1998 World Series of Baseball. So there was some, like, interesting synergy going on there.
No, I think, like, also remembering that Sisko loves baseball, it must have been fun to find a way to incorporate this actually into the canon of the show, to kind of find a way to, how does it make sense during a war for Sisko to force his entire team to play baseball, you know, and then kind of come up with this episode?
Well, to your point, when you said this is like a nice break for listeners during like all of the Dominion War stuff, because season 7 and season 6 are heavy, like they are in the war, like they're not messing around. They do some really dark storylines, and I can see it being nice to take a break. But on the flip side, I bet it was bloody annoying at the time to take a break from this really serialized, like, what happens next in the Dominion War? What's gonna happen? And then you suddenly take a break to play baseball for an episode. Like, I think that would have really frustrated me.
Yeah,
because
maybe.
Like, it's just like, wow, are we really doing this right now? Are we playing baseball when there's literally a war happening?
Yeah. I think the setup of the show is interesting as well. It really focuses a lot on Sisko's personal rivalry with a racist Vulcan.
Solok, yes.
Who has come to Deep Space Nine for repairs. And obviously from the start, you can see based on the way that they kind of act this scene out that there's just this history between the two of them. And in a conversation sort of towards the last third of the episode, Sisko reveals to his wife the backstory of mm-hmm. this like really embarrassing moment that happened to Sisko when he was in college, essentially, where he lost a wrestling match with this Vulcan, and the Vulcan then used that loss as an example in multiple psychology papers and then would go on in his career to often reference it in every published piece of material, kind of as a personal vendetta. And mm-hmm. so Sisko is like really annoyed, like, I don't know if hates is the right word, but he's so bothered by what this person is, you know, doing and saying in his perspective mm-hmm. that he really loses his cool throughout this entire episode. He just is incredibly unprofessional.
Yes.
And if there is a war going on and he's diverting all of these resources to playing baseball, it's even more confusing to me. Why it's just a silly episode. It's a silly episode.
No, it is really silly.
But it's a silly episode inside of a war kind of thing. But the setup here is that the rival Vulcan comes to town and has this specific holodeck program that his crew has been working with for a long time. And they just want to play this game of, wouldn't you know it, baseball, which Sisko can't turn down.
Of course not. And he believes that he's being baited.
He is.
And that Solok has specifically right? picked baseball, knowing how much Sisko loves it. Like, I'm going to strip every ounce of humanity you have by challenging you to the game that you love the most, knowing that a team of Vulcans can absolutely walk all over pretty much any group of any other species.
Yeah. So in 2 weeks' time, they have... so then we get this... It's kind of like a montage episode where you get to watch your beloved Deep Space Nine characters just do a terrible, terrible approach at baseball. And that is something I actually liked about this episode
yes.
is that they lose, okay?
I wrote
in my notes, if they win, I quit. Because
oh no, we nearly lost her.
There's no way that they should win against Vulcans who have been practicing forever, and you've got these derpy group of people that are like goonying their way through this episode. Like, this is an accidental mess.
Unless you're hacking the holodeck to deliberately fuck with the balls thrown by the Vulcans or like overweighting their bats, there's no way
the humans
win. Exactly.
Yeah. And I really like that the episode didn't say like, okay, our team is going to win, but instead it takes a stance that they're winning because they tried. They're winning because they came together as a team. They're winning because they had fun. And ultimately they're winning because they're going to goad this horrible Vulcan and become just as horrible themselves. And that was a little bit odd. That was a little bit like the whole like mocking. There's something to be said about the storytelling aspect of, you know, you make a bad guy and then you make shitting on the bad guy okay.
Yes.
Kind of like if there's a murder show and someone's going to die, like you make sure it's okay that they're going to murder. Like we want to know that he kicks puppies before we kill him because
yes.
we want to have a... But old storytelling is just like, nope, this guy's a bully and so we're going to bully him back. And that's going to level the playing field a little bit. We're all going to feel better about ourselves. And that was a little bit rough for me as far as the ending goes. But I think the heart of what the episode was trying to do is say, we're going to have fun even if we don't win, because Sisko eventually remembers what a game is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be like, well, in this world, it's not supposed to be highly competitive in whether you win or not. Mm. It's the memories you make along the way.
Oh, of course. Well, let's roll back to the very, very beginning, because I really love... I love the way this entire episode is written. I really, really do. Like, it can be seen as like a silly throwaway episode, but I think it's written very deliberately, and it is oozing. Like, oozing to the point where Solok is on the edge of being an unbelievable Vulcan for me. But that opening exchange between him and Sisko, where Sisko baits him by saying it's been 10 years, and then he gives like exactly like 10 years, 10 months, whatever. I'm sure you've got it written down.
10 years, 2 months, and 5 days.
And Sisko's just like, oh, I'm surprised you don't know the minutes. And Solok is like, well, I know that irritates humans. Like, there is like some deep, deep-seated hatred in there. And before we know what that hatred is, you're like, did he kill someone? Like, did he steal something? Is there something, like, is he a corrupt Starfleet captain? And it's, no, it's fucking, like, it's a college argument that they had. But the seething anger from Sisko, I love that exchange so, so much. I really, really do.
Yeah, it definitely set the stage that something was very, very wrong between the two of them. I want to kind of hone in on this idea of, like, Solok's character. And maybe it's because I haven't seen very many Vulcan characters besides... Yeah. Strange New Worlds version of Spock, which includes his wife.
Yes.
T'Lyn.
T'Lyn. No.
Points for that?
To Pring.
God damn it.
T'Lyn is a Vulcan though, but in Lower Decks. That's you being Vulcanist.
Oh, you're confusing T'Lyn.
The two female Vulcans so that you know and you confuse them.
Oh man. I felt like I was so proud of myself.
So you were so happy.
I was so happy for a second there. You know what? It's fine. Maybe whenever I actually do name enough characters in one episode, like, I will have arrived and the show is over.
That's when we know to finish. Yeah. There is no more that you need to watch.
Fuck. Anyway, so that Vulcan. I remember also, like, maybe her parents, maybe? Or maybe it was Spock's parents in an episode of Strange New World. Somebody visited, I think, in one of the Strange New Worlds episodes, and I just remember very matriarchal sort of intensity.
Yeah.
I've obviously Spock's seen mother. Episode now, and that one had, like, the queen of all Vulcans.
Yes, T'Pau.
Yeah, lots of tits going on. And so I feel like what I've been shown is... I don't know, maybe like a more restrained judgment style.
Mm-hmm.
But when you just said that it's a borderline offensive Vulcan kind of concept, I found myself really having a hard time believing he wasn't being emotional in this episode.
It's so hard. And the TNG DS9 era does this a lot, especially going into Enterprise, which is a series that is a prequel series. So it's like at the dawn of Starfleet and the very beginning where the Vulcans are like helping Starfleet and helping humans get into the galaxy. That era of Star Trek pushes and pushes what I'm comfortable with a Vulcan being, which sounds so like kind of prudish. But in my head, I'm like, Vulcans, if they follow logic that much and they're that kind of like... that kind of like intellectual and advanced, then how are they not beyond... being this racist and this judgmental.
No, yeah.
And these episodes push it really hard for me.
But the chat is reminding me, and I appreciate it. Thanks for Sean and Flashlight and, you know, Wandering, JCD. We see all your guys' comments. And it's really appreciated because I need to remember that they're not, Vulcans are not, they are emotional. They've just worked at suppressing their emotions.
They're not void of emotions.
Right. And I think sometimes I forget that bit, you know, a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting then to kind of go, oh, that's not my Vulcan, which is super racist. And then also add to that, no, this is an example of what a Vulcan can become and can be.
Yes.
When the emotion is maybe turned acidic and it's vile and it's sort of like almost... this person believes that their version of an emotionless, logical approach includes these variables. And that's an interesting concept as well, because we do have a very sour Solok. So,
and I think as a general rule, that's fine. I get it. Like, I get that, like, some people can... Vulcans will have as much variety as humans. Like, you're going to have... arrogant Vulcans, you're going to have shy and meek Vulcans.
Yeah.
And I end up being okay with it as the person who gets to make a judgment on this.
Yes.
So I'm
we
okay.
We who judge Star Trek.
Exactly. I'm all right with Solok in this episode because he really is an extreme. Like, he has made it his life's work specifically to prove that Vulcans are superior. And this interaction, or maybe multiple interactions over his life, have made him zero in on humans specifically.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that all Vulcans are like this, but the Vulcans that we see in Star Trek tend to be like this. And I get it, because that's interesting conflict. Like, you want this superior being that's, like, superior intellectually, physically. They would argue emotionally superior as well. You want to see them be brought down a peg or two. But Solok is, like, way super on the edge extreme. To, like, being, like, xenophobic and racist about humans. And that's always tough for me to find from a Vulcan.
It's also, I'm also really confused, like, this episode presses that Starfleet would allow a full Vulcan ship.
Oh, and that's so confusing to me. I don't know why Vulcans, I don't know how they've maneuvered their way into having an entire Vulcan ship. If it was really anti-Starfleet.
Yeah.
And just stay with the Vulcan Science Academy. Like, what, are you admitting that Starfleet has better ships? Because if you've got an entire ship full of Vulcans in Starfleet, they're admitting that there's something superior in Starfleet compared to the Vulcan Science Academy or wherever their ships are called.
Yeah. So their rivalry is the catalyst for the rest of this episode. Eventually, the crew ends up understanding Sisko's motivation to best his rival on a, you know, personal level. And that sort of fuels them to do better. But I feel like the big hits of this episode are the silly things happening with baseball, getting to watch Star Trek characters fumble around on a field. And then watching them kind of practice on Deep Space Nine in these various places. You know, we get to see them practicing and drilling in the boardroom and in the bar area. Like, they're in full of injuries. So it's sort of like when things go terribly wrong, when you decide you have a really intense baseball game with a superior opponent in just a couple weeks, like, they really throw themselves into it. And then the highlight really is what comes of all of that, and this sort of culmination of, like, letting the rejected person back on the team to have the big win at the end, which isn't technically the actual win. And then the crew all, you know, mocking their rival in the end. But those are the things I think this show is trying to do. And it did it well.
Yeah, so did you enjoy the silliness in the middle of the episode? Because I imagine, and I say silliness in a, like, I like this episode, so I don't mean silliness in a derogatory way.
Right.
But the silliness with them going through the rules. Like, I imagine if I was a baseball nerd, watching Kira, Worf, and Nog sit around a table talking through the baseball rule book, using all of this terminology, it would be like my favorite people talking about Star Trek, really specifically. Like, I imagine that's really, really fun for, especially an American audience, to, like, see them engage with a sport that is hugely, hugely popular, I think, in America. So I imagine, like, just delving into that and indulging in the silliness of letting them mess up and get through the tryouts and have all of these injuries must have been fun for probably the majority of people who enjoy baseball.
Yeah, I think it's doing what it thinks it needs to do for this episode, which is have everybody, like, learn a lot of rules. They were very, very intricate with the rules.
I kind of love that.
Yeah, especially as a fleet of people who run a space station. They are used to reading the manuals. They're used to how they have to be on their A game so that no one dies in space. So they attack this like they're going to be going to battle or trying to stay alive. I think for me personally, and I know I say a lot of intense things and I say them as I feel them, but truly and genuinely, Sisko really ruins this episode for me.
All right, that's really interesting. Let's dig into that.
And I think it's very Sisko forward. So if you're watching Deep Space Nine, I'm sure this is a really, like, a normal kind of a character that you're used to experiencing and being, but, like, this is my first time to really have a Sisko heavy sort of moment. So far too much Sisko for me on this episode. It's like when you get something to eat. Yes. Okay. So those of you who are keeping track at home, I'm making a food link. One for the bingo card. It's like when you, like, order a pizza and it comes with some toppings you weren't quite expecting and you're like, yeah, this is okay. But it was way too much anchovy.
Mm.
It overpowered everything else for me. So, like, how I would have loved it to go is you see Worf's approach to getting the team together. You see, and I think that they were trying to do that. They had different kind of sets and scenes where someone is drilling them of the rules. And you have these great one-liners with Worf.
Oh my gosh, he's so great.
This is my bias because I'm a Deep Space Nine girl. I mean, a TNG girl. I want that character. I want to hear him tell these people that he works with how to properly swing a bat and equate it to something that he did. Oh, this is like this game back home. And I wanted to see Worf hit a ball so hard it blew up the bat.
It's been a while since I've seen this episode, and I couldn't remember if Worf ends up hitting the ball. I thought that's what they were building up to. And I was dying for him to, like, you know when the pigeon gets hit by the batter?
Yes.
And you go,
yeah.
Worf to do that, or yes, to shatter the baseball mm-hmm. bat because he's a Klingon.
Yeah.
So yeah, I get that desire.
So
yeah.
There was just like a, or, you know, but you do have the doctor approaching by fixing all of the injuries. That's a really unique approach. So I think it works for me. It was fun to watch them tackle this game. Because I do not relate to a love of baseball, I was just like, yeah, you know, okay, you're tackling a project. That's kind of fine. That's kind of fine. But the intensity and the vitriol and the old anger, the bitterness, and just the nastiness of Sisko really changes the temperature of this episode for me.
I completely get it. And it highlights, the reason I think this episode works so well is that it highlights exactly what I hate about sports and also what I completely understand people love about sports. So this is, Sisko loses all perspective completely. And we do this as humans so much. When we get committed to any team, doesn't just have to be sports, but sports is a great example. The place where we grew up, the place that are like our parents or parental figures, the sports that they supported and the team that they supported, that's what we get tied to and that becomes our tribe. And baseball is Sisko's tribe. It should be Space Nine is his tribe and his people are his tribe, but he loses all perspective when it comes to this. And it is really jarring because this isn't Sisko. Like, he is very harsh and he's very disciplined, but he is rarely unfair. Like, he's really super principled, as most incredible Starfleet captains are. But when it comes to this, you're right, he's mean. And it's hard to see the good guy, the Starfleet captain, be that mean. Specifically to Rom, where he doesn't just kick him off the team or, like, have some conversation about it. It's, you're out of here. And he's like, I can't play baseball. Genius, you just said the smartest thing I've heard you say all day. You can't play baseball. And just absolutely losing it. And this tribal thing with sports can turn us into monsters, but it works for me because you have to get Sisko to that point. You have to get him basically to the villain to get the satisfaction of him in the bleachers with Rom and being taught how to enjoy baseball and being taught by his crew, who are terrible at baseball but are still having fun. And as soon as he's not involved in the game anymore, they start having fun. And you just see this switch in his head. And at the very end, when he apologizes to Rom, like, the episode just doesn't leave it as they're all having fun and yeah, 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 they make fun of the Vulcan. He takes a minute and goes to Rom and says, yeah, I was a dick. I apologize. And if you ever told me that, like, Sisko apologizes to Rom for something, it would be, like, way down my list of potential possibilities, because Rom is the comic relief. He is the butt of all of the jokes. So for Sisko to have a reason to apologize to him, that's a big deal. So that's why, bottom line, the episode works for me, because yeah, he goes through some really shitty peaks, but the payoff at the end, I love it so much.
Yeah, there are some really fun beats in this. You know, I really do think that there's a lot of moments where this is really fun. Like, for example, when the very first thing that they do is they start mocking the batter, like, bada, 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 you know, like,
bada, 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 bada.
And then I think that's whenever Worf says something like, kill him.
Oh, deadpan, death to the opposition.
Death to the opposition.
That's it. But it's when Rom, one of the Vulcans didn't hit home plate, I think. Sorry if I get any of this terminology wrong. And Nog is like, what do I do? And Worf's just like, kill him.
Yes. Find him and kill him.
It's so great. But I did notice this time that Worf for the first time ever, is reduced to catchphrases.
All
of his dialogue is what would a Klingon do during baseball? And it's hilarious, but it doesn't do a service to Worf as a character, but it's the funniest bit of the episode for me.
I think, like, in a wild world, you know, Sisko, like, we rewrite this episode, and Sisko is not intense, and so everyone's not taking it as seriously. And Worf just gets a bit triggered during one of it and just tackles one of the Vulcans and breaks his leg.
Yes.
And then they're both ejected, obviously. And then, you know, Rom has to come back in or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, to go back to what your point was about kind of Sisko's evolution in this episode. And I'm glad that you can kind of see how the peaks and the valleys of the emotional charge really, like, lend his character or lend to this particular episode. For me, it was obviously a very character focus. If you're going to do a character focus, especially for Sisko, I think this is a must. You have to watch this episode because he is a flawed character, and this one flaunts those flaws really, really strongly in your face because of how he's treating the blindness, the blind sort of competition that he thinks he has to make up for. Like, this is his moment. But it baffles me to think that there is a person who believes that they could beat this Vulcan team from the start. And yes. So it's his blind, his blindness to what's actually happening. It's you have to just swallow the episode. You just got to watch it. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't make sense that, are we supposed to watch this episode and assume that the entire crew is only practicing when they're off work? Or is this their job for 2 weeks?
No, they just messaged the Dominion and said, we're going to have to pause the war for 2 weeks. Any other ships that want to come in, the entire senior staff, O'Brien, who is more important than the station core, more important than the Deep Space Nine computer, is out of action for 2 weeks because he's playing baseball. Like, the space station should have fallen apart. Caveats. Yeah, you've got to put it out of your brain.
I think we're supposed to believe this is just in, because he says 07:30 at one point in time.
And in the morning,
maybe their shift starts at like 9. So maybe they do have a couple hours to put in before and after work. But that's not
that's
really
a good point.
That's not really like kind of, I guess you kind of leave that part gray. And this is sort of for this 2 weeks of time in their free time, they just obsessed over baseball to kind of stop thinking about the war and then do something different.
I love to imagine that in the edit, when they finally watched the episode, they were like, huh, really looks like they spent 2 weeks practicing. That's not what we intended in the script. Like, maybe the intent was, yeah, they do it in their off hours.
Right.
But when you watch the episode, it's like, yeah, really looks like they didn't do any Star Trekking at all.
Were
just in the holosuite for 2 weeks, which is court-martialable.
Just like one moment of them actually doing their jobs.
Yeah, and then would have helped.
When
yeah.
the boss turns around, they like throw a ball across the room just to practice.
Yeah.
That would have been kind of funny.
Well, I mean, they kind of do that in Quark's bar where they're throwing stuff to Quark.
But they're running a bar.
Yeah, they're running a bar. And there's no like O'Brien with like baseball elbow trying to like tap away at a computer. Man, I wish this Elkar's keypad wasn't like at a right angle for my elbows.
Yeah. I did enjoy some of the training montage stuff, but just to hit hard on this, because like I said, it's my favorite and I really want to talk about it.
Mm.
I know you want to talk about my dislike of Sisko so that the fans hate me. Like,
No, I have one more thought on that, but it's
do we do that
protective.
And then the other thing, or do we do the other thing and then come back to Sisko?
Let's do your other thing, because you might forget it. Yeah.
So it's Odo, like another character that I don't have a lot of history with, but that I do remember some Odo things. I remember that Odo has a bucket.
He does.
I remember that I think I've seen an episode where he died, right? Like skipping ahead in the timeline. Or he was really, really dry.
Yes, yes. You are remembering.
He was like scaly or something. Like he was having a rough time.
Correct.
And I remember like feeling for this character that has no facial expression. Which is such a testament to the actor, you know, and like the emotion that they're able to convey with body language and the music and camera angles and all of that stuff. So I do like my words I pull for Odo are like loyalty, command. He's someone who's in charge, respected, and then like mysterious. He's a very mysterious individual. but also like very traditional. I have this like memory of him doing things very like by the book or anyway, those are the things I'm remembering about Odo.
He is lawful neutral.
Yeah.
100%.
So when Sisko comes to him for the job of being the umpire.
Yeah.
I was really excited because I knew right away that the show was giving this important moment to a character that really would respect it. It was an attempt to usurp their terrible abilities by letting someone from their team, you know, like.
Can you imagine having a shapeshifter on your team? Absolutely should have been on the team. Ridiculous.
It's wild that the Vulcans didn't say, well, you can't have someone from your own group as the umpire, but maybe they just knew. Anyway, so there's a moment when
the Vulcan, Solok?
Nope. It's a woman. A colonel?
Colonel Kira.
Kira. Yeah. See? I did it.
You got it.
Uh-huh.
I got there.
And she's like walking by the door and he's practicing how to, and I loved that so much.
Safe!
Like he was really getting into it.
Oh, I love it.
And that was really fun for me.
Yeah.
But then to see him during the baseball game, there's something really powerful that happens sometimes. You just like subconsciously don't even realize it's happening, but like, which I guess is the definition of subconscious. In a moment when this baseball game could just go into utter chaos, to have one character that you can ground into and trust is such a valuable anchor for storytelling. And they did such a great job of setting up Odo as that anchor where I trust Odo. And even when he faults our own team, our guys, you know, I'm okay with that. And that was such a...
You took the point away from us as if you were out there yourself.
Oh my God, that was a good...
I could do angry Sisko.
Sisko told him to get back in a bucket or something. Like, what an asshole.
Oh my God. That is the worst line in all of Star Trek. What were you looking at? What were you doing? Regenerating? That's the most brutal. And I know whoever wrote that was chuckling to themselves when they wrote that. But that is a brutal thing to say.
It was so bad.
That is harshness.
So... And that again shows Sisko's just off the rails. But when Odo is making the calls and he's doing the things, and then it shifts at some point, they've established that he is a lawful, believable, like foundational part of the show. We're comfortable with that as the viewer. And then it shows his willingness to still be that, but also allow the team to do what needs to be done. Like he gets to enjoy. When Solok,
he sends Solok off as well. And he takes a bit more joy in sending. So it's like,
exactly.
So good. Yeah. Odo is, I think, the strongest part of the episode for me. It's the bit that I, like you said, I ground into. I love the Sisko stuff. I really, really do. But Odo is so satisfying.
Yeah.
And the reason he's such a great pick, and you've hinted on this without realizing, maybe it's buried in your subconscious somewhere, but Odo's such a good pick because the space station, Deep Space Nine, was built and run by the Cardassians. And Odo was in charge of security when the Cardassians were running it. So he reported to the Cardassians. He saw the shit that was happening to the Bajorans, but he was just like, they're in charge, so I listened to them. These are the laws. Whether you're Cardassian or Bajoran, you obey the laws and you're great. And then he stayed when Bajor and Starfleet took over the space station because he's neutral. So he is used to playing that role of, you give me a set of rules and I don't care who the boss is. I'm not here to make value judgment. I'm here to make sure that the law and the rules are executed perfectly. And so he's the perfect choice for this. And I buy it. I buy it more than Riker having to prosecute Data for not being human and to prove that he's a machine. I buy this more than I buy Riker doing a convincing argument.
Yeah. I also love that in my memory, Odo does get emotional and like, you can see him emoting, like maybe you'll see the emotions kind of, but in this episode, when he becomes umpire, you get to see him be like dominantly in charge.
Yes.
And that feels really good too. Like when he stands up to Sisko or when he's making his calls and these kinds of things. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was a really good part of it, but Odo was a major, major win for me on this one.
No, I completely agree. Circling back to Cisco, I want to concede.
Apologize. Oh, okay.
Concede, which is just a fancy way of saying I apologize while holding some ego. Mm-hmm. I will concede this is not a good episode to introduce people to Deep Space Nine, because the caricature that they have to turn Cisco into in order to get the satisfying ending is not representative of the rest of the show. Also, baseball, not representative of the rest of the show. Also, the rest of the cast being absolute, just physically inadequate in almost every way. Not representative of the rest of the show. As much as I love it and it's really fun, it's not a good way to introduce somebody to Deep Space Nine at all, on any level. Apologies.
No, this would maybe be, if you're going to show 3 episodes or 4 episodes, you would tuck this one in on number 3 and then end on something else for 4.
Yeah, if I'm doing 5, this would be 3 or 4, and then end on a big punch for 5. But genuinely, I have this, I am struggling so much because some of the greatest episodes of Star Trek are in Deep Space Nine, and they've been in your emails for your personal favorite Trek, but I don't want to cover them until Dene has more background and more, because the reason those episodes hit really hard, I honestly believe it's with the added context of who these people are. In The Pale Moonlight specifically, don't really appreciate Garak and you don't really know how dire the Dominion War is, you are not going to appreciate the stakes in The Pale Moonlight. It's really challenging to pick out these episodes of Deep Space Nine for us to watch.
I would challenge you to just do it. Because if it's written well, even if it's your first time watching the show, it should have some enough clues to like give you enough that you understand at least a little. Like maybe you don't understand everything, but we can never really approach this show in a completist fashion never watch anything.
Yeah, we're not going to go season 1, episode 1, Deep Space Nine, continue. And there are lots of podcasts out there that do that and they're great. It's not the format that we're going for. So we will end up watching those episodes and I will just go into them just being like, the writing has got to just hold up on its own.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. And I think that's a good thing to kind of talk about here. And I also want to say, like, I do push the buttons. Like, I did see Jadzia's a couple of times. I'm like, yeah, she's okay. Like, I can see how the audience was telling me that she's like me and that I would like her as a character. And I'm open to seeing more of her. And I also understand that the show has decided in this episode to show me the parts of Cisco that we are supposed to not like. Like, it's going to push our buttons. It's going to press us outside of our comfort zone. It's an interesting first thing to see. But I guess I can understand that his pride has given him this big old Achilles heel for this person that represents a bullying, and not even just the normal kind of bullying that we would experience in our school, but the kind of bullying where a Vulcan has ascended to greatness and continues to use you as an example of failure. I can understand why he would be annoyed. I just don't understand how he would think that he would win this game.
I think it's the number one sin of the episode. That's not true, but I completely agree with you. The really difficult buy-in I have is the fight that Cisco is choosing to pick. And Cassidy spells it out. She's like, why did you pick a fight with a Vulcan? You know, they've got 3 times your strength. And the answer is he was drunk. But the problem is he was young and he was drunk. He's now a captain, not drunk, other than on ego. And he still, Solok didn't hide anything. This is a program he wrote to team build with his crew of Vulcans. So even if they're on a level playing field, they have the advantage because they've been practicing. I don't know how Cisco thought through plucky courage and determination they were ever going to do it. And to the episode's credit, they get obliterated. They get destroyed. But it is hard to not go to Cisco and be like, are you okay? Like, what was your plan here to win? Because it wasn't happening.
Yeah. This episode also tells me that this character loves to hear himself talk.
I will absolutely fight you on that because I love to hear him talk as well. I will listen to Cisco read and Avery Brooks. He will read the phone book in reverse alphabetical order and I will listen.
Boy,
his voice
did he
is
talk.
Incredible. But yes.
He talks a lot.
He does. And
he likes to kind of like It seems like he's the guy that has to, you know, rally the crew and give them the inspirational
speech.
Like
he's the captain?
I just don't remember that happening with Picard.
So Picard does the one-on-one speeches. Yeah, he doesn't really do the team building. He does the one-on-one character moments that give a lesson. And then he gets his big voice on when he's confronting somebody on the view screen or he's confronting an enemy.
Yes, so I really enjoyed how he was... Sisko's approach to the very first conversation with Saki Vulcan, because he had this line and it was something like, you're welcome to go to a Vulcan space station.
Yeah.
However many light years away, if you'd like to.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like you can do that or you can do what we have here. And it was clear that Saki was given some digs and trying to
very inefficient. Yeah. That's a very inefficient way to repair a warp cord. It'll take a week.
Yeah. It seems like it's a really good, actually. Warp cores seem to be very, very difficult.
Seems like something you want to spend some time on fixing.
Which shows us that, you know, Saki's not a great, not someone to just like immediately be respected. And I immediately respected Sisko because he obviously didn't like him. He still did his business, which he's supposed to do. And he was a little sassy back, but not to the point of just being really like, it wasn't too much. It didn't go too far for me.
No,
the
very
rest
under the surface
of the episode went too far.
Yes.
Him letting his anger and frustration and fear of losing again out on his crew was hard to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also interesting that the person that they gave the role of companion to, I mean, his wife, so his actual companion, to solve that, to give us the backstory, to kind of help us understand why he's so angry. And I loved that switch, the humor switch of him saying, promise, don't tell. And then the very next thing, she's like, I told him that I wasn't going to tell.
And that's what I love about Cassidy, because Sisko is intimidating, like both physically, verbally, like characteristically. He is like, I mean, Rom cowers in fear. Nog respects him. Everyone is like, very respectful of Sisko, and Cassidy calls him out so often the person closest to you is allowed to call you out and has that permission to, I know you better than anyone else, step down, I don't care how big you are. And she brings him to task a lot and is very often his moral compass.
So like, I thought that it was humorous, but I also was confused by it, going, oh, okay, so she isn't respecting her husband's wish to keep this
that
private.
Too, yeah.
You know, that
I don't
was a
think
little
they're
strange.
Married at this point.
I see.
Just to anyone shouting at us via email right now, they are. I don't think
is
they're
partner?
Married yet.
What
they're
did
in,
they say?
They are in. There are. They're definitely together for sure.
Oh, okay. I absolutely 100% assumed incorrectly. Because my note says he's getting a back rub from wife, but there was no, like, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but they're either way, they're definitely together.
Because his back was a, quote, a minefield of bruised muscles.
Yeah.
So I understood that the show needed to get the information to the crew so that they had more of an understanding of the motivation of their captain, but it still points out Sisko's pride issue.
Yeah, 100%. He won't use that to motivate them. And it's such a great motivator.
It
like,
is.
Open yourself up. Like, let them see that bit of vulnerability. Like, Cassidy nails it. Let them see what you're fighting for. Because right now, they think you're a dick.
He is.
Yeah, he is. Right now, they are correct that you are a dick.
Like, imagine the HR that had to be happening.
Oh,
like,
my
just the ideas of, I'm being forced to play baseball.
Yeah.
I'm not having a good time. He pushes his son. When his son doesn't do well, he shoves
him.
Oh,
yeah, the physical contact.
And I'm just thinking to myself, how is he not reported that this is a bit too much? Which is why I think it has to have all been in their off time. You know, their 2 weeks of, you get their
well,
little
the problem is,
in.
You're addressing Kira as Colonel and making everybody call you Captain. You're making this a work thing. Like, they should call you something else. Otherwise, you are absolutely abusing them at work.
Yeah. But that's, again, why I think we say to an episode like this, you just have to have fun.
You just
got to
let it happen and have fun. So the Jadzia thing, you did notice at some point.
Oh, yes, I did.
So when did that twig for you that we weren't looking at Jadzia, but we were looking at Dax?
Oh, yes. Okay, well, I wasn't sure it was Dax until right
moment.
Now. So now I know.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah, because I wasn't sure. So I noticed that this new character to me, we'll call her not Zia, has nope.
Wait,
that doesn't
what?
Sound good.
No,
not,
no.
I was saying Jadzia, not Jadzia, no, and I went no. not Zia.
Yep.
Let's not do that. That's not my best name. We're gonna just
oh no
skip over that. Okay. What's her? Well, just tell me your name, maybe.
No, yeah, no. Her name is Ezri.
Ezri. So Ezri. Says something. Good she Lord. Says old man at one point in time.
Sisko says old man to Ezri.
Yeah. And I'm like, old man, that's what Jadzia used to call him. So that's
what he called Jadzia because Jadzia's previous host was Sisko's mentor.
Right, was an old man.
And he was an old man, yes.
So then I thought, oh, okay, if this is Jadzia's version, whatever, 0.0, which I forgot was named Dax. Mm-hmm. If this is Dax, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the worm was transferred.
Correct.
Obviously successfully into a younger version of... So now I'm like, oh, what happened behind the scenes? You know, was there drama? Was the actor playing Jadzia not offered a redo? Did the audience not respond well? Did they get pregnant? Because sometimes women are fired for being pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting. Like what happened in that way? Is it a sore spot? So like my brain goes, and that's not what we're here. We don't need to get into like the tea of it all.
We want to get into the tea tonight. I want to spill the tea with you.
But it's interesting because, they have this way to carry forward this character.
Yes.
Who is, as I'm watching it now, every single time I see Ezri for the rest of the show, I'm wondering if that is Dax, not remembering the name Dax.
Yes.
But I'm like, okay, how does Worf feel about that? They obviously aren't talking to each other at all. She seems to be very young and vibrant, vibrantly energized, which is great. Mm-hmm. Oh, energized. That's funny.
Yeah.
So she was sort of a central character in a lot of the scenes for the youthful joy energy kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. So I immediately hate her, of course, but no, she seemed really interesting. Did she do the backflip to catch the ball?
That is one. Did you get the setup and payoff on that? So it's a blink and you miss it line, and I've only picked it up on this watch through. But when they're doing the practice and they're all injured, Ezri says one of my hosts, Emini, was an Olympic gymnast or whatever. So why am I struggling when I used to be a gymnast
oh,
and my
yes.
body can't remember, like my
yes.
legs can't remember this? And then at the end of the game, she does a gymnast move. She does a backflip off of the thing because some muscle memory has kicked in and she's able to do it.
That's right.
I've only noticed that on this run.
That's so clever.
This show because I get to, I'm actively watching and sinning. So that is a great payoff that they don't really highlight too much.
No, I kind of missed that a bit, but also I wasn't aware because they don't do the thing at the beginning of the show where they go through like the little Rolodex and they're like, don't forget that this person used to be all these 50,000 people.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about Ezri is that, yes, Jadzia does die at the end of season 6.
So just died.
Just died. This is one... Ezri, this actor, has one season as Dax. Because, yes, there was behind-the-scenes drama, and Jadzia left the show quite unhappily. And it took a long time before they would come back to the table in any form and talk. And yeah, there's so if you haven't seen the documentary What We Leave Behind, which is the Deep Space Nine documentary, there is an incredible interview where they all get together and air it out. And you guys hurt me. You didn't stick up for me. I left the show miserable. And also talking about Ezri, who had to come in and replace the person who'd been playing Dax for 6 years and like how it felt for her to join for one season. It's incredible behind the scenes stuff that happened that, yes, is for another podcast, I think.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just assuming, let me make an assumption here. Was it anything to do with her being just a woman and being talked to inappropriately?
Yep, there was definitely a big element of that. There's definitely some sexism that came into play, if all accounts are to be believed, which I think there are. And it was a very unfortunate departure that could have been avoided, honestly.
Well,
could have been.
Good for her for leaving.
Good for, like, she stuck to her guns. She She left, and I can't imagine how hard it has to be. Hard.
Well, especially when you feel a responsibility to deliver a character for an audience. You know, I think about this sometimes when I'll watch Critical Role, for example. You've got these amazing voice actors who are portraying these characters every single week for 4 hours in this Dungeons and Dragons style where they're doing an entertainment thing and they're just giving it their all, and then they're committed to the character possibly dying. But at some point, that has to come to an end. They can't just keep being that character. They have to have something. And either the Dungeon Master is going to end their campaign, and then they're going to say goodbye. But there's just this sadness as an audience when you're like, oh, that was my favorite character, and I don't get to see them anymore. Like, I cried a couple of times knowing that different various shows were going to end when I was really liking a specific character. And that's a really powerful thing. But when you are in a world that is dominated by men and there's a lot of inappropriate things that are said or done, and you're kind of expected just to deal with it because, oh, you know, and again, I'm making a lot of assumptions here and I'm making a lot of statements here, but that are kind of more broad. But like, you're lucky to have this job, so just take it.
Oh,
Jesus, yeah. Even all the way down to the things that I've experienced as a woman in like the working world. Thankfully, not my job now. I have an amazing team that I work with, all male team that I work with. It's incredible. But like, it's just wild that you have to have such a strong sense of self to kind of go, I'm going to leave this character behind. And then the show has to find a way to go, okay, fuck, what do we do now?
And honestly, Deep Space Nine got fucking lucky that Ezri is as good as she is. Like, I've completely forgotten the name of the actor.
For Ezri?
Yeah, for Ezri.
While you look it up, I will say, and just to kind of shift away from the serious, like to go back into the show part of it, it's so interesting to think that Jadzia was just kind of killed off, and now we have this new version of Dax, and it's just sort of like, everyone is in episode 4 here. I would have never known that they had any kind of like relationship. Ezri's just chilling. She's just straight like, this my new Bob, what's going on?
Yeah, basically just a new haircut. There's so much I could get into about it, but Nicole DeBoer, she's great. She's incredible. She encapsulates this version of Dax so, so well. Like, it is such a credit to her that season 7 doesn't feel super weird, because she's so great as Dax. And the reason, like, I accidentally love this arc, because the relationship with Sisko feels intentional, because you start with old Curzon, who was Sisko's mentor, into Jadzia, who is now Sisko's basically equal, and then into Ezri, who is very inexperienced and very young, who Sisko mentor.
Like, oh, it's that like is, a full circle
it
is, thing.
It gives me tingles, this accidental full circle inversion of what their roles are, as if it was intentional.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's sad how it came about, but it works beautifully for Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. What an interesting kind of character to have on your crew.
Yeah.
A being that can transfer. So you're not necessarily losing. Like, if it was a human, they'd be going, okay, how do we get this brain into the next
thing?
All, you know?
It's contrived, and it's like you don't buy it. Oh, it's a clone. Great. But this is introducing Doctor Who into Star Trek, because essentially they regenerate and they have the same memories, but they're a different character.
So,
and the stuff with Worf is fascinating, like how they deal with that transition, of course, because he's lost his wife, but has he? Is so interesting.
Well,
so interesting.
I'm glad that they explore that, because that would be a really interesting part of being a Daxian.
Yes. Yeah. We'll leave it with that. Yep.
What are the wormies called?
Trill.
That's it.
The Trill. Yeah.
So, which I still think is one of the most fascinating sci-fi creatures that Star Trek has.
Completely agree.
Borrowed from Tribbles is number one, though.
Tribbles and then Trill. It's really the T's. The T-R-I's. Yeah.
And the Talins.
And the Talins of the world. So yeah, I guess the final moment of the episode I wanted to just circle back to, because it didn't work for you. I may be a bad human because I loved it. So I love, and it is just this intrinsic seeing the big bad get taken down. And yeah, they gang up on him, but the way he walks into it and the stuff they call out, I really love, because the way so often we're like, man, that sounded emotional. Like that sounded really, really heated.
Yes.
And they're calling it out, because it was like, I hear it. I hear some irritation, and calling out a Vulcan for being emotional. That's just a way to tick them off.
Yeah, it was,
and
like
he calls everyone humans as well, like, and they call him out.
A hint of anger, a touch of jealousy. Let me see my note. A bitterness. Is he always this emotional?
No, it's so mean. Is he always this emotional?
And then he says something about this human game of taunting, and then they say, all the intelligence and still doesn't know what a human is.
Did I leave my spots at home today?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. You are trying to manufacture a triumph where none exists. And Sisko's like, yep, it's exactly what we're doing. This is our version of triumphant. And they hate that.
He toasts to it.
It's the only way they can win. It is the only victory they can have. And they to write yourself into that, for me, was extremely satisfying. Because I don't like sports episodes. I don't like underdog stories because I'm always waiting, like, well, you can find some contrived way to let them win, or you do the shocking thing and they lose, and neither really is satisfying for me. This ending is super satisfying because they get destroyed, but they find a genuine victory that is so much more important than the Vulcans winning.
I think that it is a wonderful win, but that the ultimate win would be Sisko printing something that reflects the baseball game as an example of humans triumph. And then he publishes that.
Yes!
And then that becomes, like, he needs to publish it so that it comes full circle.
And here's the video record of Solok being confronted and how emotional he got. And that's how he ends every single paper he writes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's perfect. Anything else before we go and do some pips?
No, I think I appreciate the conversation. Deep Space Nine is an untapped part of our Captain's Pod world. And so it's really fun because, and I know not everyone obviously who listens can join the live chat, but it's really interesting to be a part of the community that has so much experience with Deep Space Nine and will like bring up references during the show and kind of like give more context. So I really appreciate everyone who listens to the show who kind of understands, again, our format is just to jump in and talk about it as it happens.
I love it. I love it so much. And I always feel a guilt that we're not, I personally am not representing DS9, which is, it's up there. It's like my second or third favorite Trek. Strange New Worlds now just is getting up there. And I love Deep Space Nine so, so much. And there's so much to respect about it. A couple of things I wanted to mention. We have the Christopher Pike Medal for Valor.
Yes, we do.
Pre-Strange New Worlds, pre the movies that introduced us to Christopher Pike. This is a deep callback. This could have so easily been the Captain Kirk Medal for Honor, but they chose Christopher Pike, and that has aged like a fine wine today.
Yeah, I liked that. Yeah, especially watching Strange New Worlds and be like, oh.
It's so, so good. Rom, this is great. Thank you to Flyboy for sending this in. The actor that plays Rom, Max Odenchik, I cannot say his last name, Rom, he was a semi-pro baseball player. And he has to be the worst.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's so great.
That's so good.
He's right-handed. They forced him to play left-handed because it's the only way he could be convincingly bad at baseball.
That's so brilliant.
So fucking brilliant.
Oh, that's a good one, Flyboy.
Oh, thank you, Flyboy, for that. And someone else did mention it in the live chat as well. So thank you for mentioning it. But it's so great. He's a semi-pro baseballer and he has to just be bottom of the list. Just incredible. One final thing. This is great. I love this so much. Welcome to the official anthem of the United Federation of Planets.
Oh, I thought about that when they're playing the music.
When they're introduced and they've got their caps on. Written, composed for this episode. The first time that you ever hear it. So you get we now have an official anthem for the Federation of Planets. The United Federation of Planets. However, there is something inside of me, and I'm not saying this would be a good idea, but I think it would have aged well. What if the anthem had been the Star Trek theme?
That'd be stupid.
No, it would be stupid in the moment, maybe.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. I don't mean to dismiss your love.
Just shut me fucking down so hard.
I think it would be stupid.
I think it would have been stupid too, but I think it would have aged really well.
No, stop. Listen, that song.
In universe. The song now exists in universe.
Which doesn't make any fucking sense because in the universe, they know they're being observed by us.
No, they don't. No, they
would.
Don't. 100%. No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
Because the United Federation of Planets theme isn't the Star Trek theme. It's a piece of music that was written that in our universe is the Star Trek theme, but in their universe, it's just, yeah, that's the United Federation of Planets theme.
Chat's the also TNG, reminded yes. me that Boimler hummed it.
The TNG theme exists. Yes.
Oh, that's right.
So it would have aged well because in Lower Decks, Boimler is now humming the UFP theme. There's no way you get away with it in 1998. It would have been eye roll.
Oh yeah.
Central. Everybody would have as well have looked to camera.
Here's what you do. Okay, set the stage. Do the thing that happened when I learned about Superman. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I know this story. Okay. Yeah.
So this was a couple years ago. You were here. Uh-huh. We were working. And you had your like epic music going. If you don't know this about Ian, when he works sometimes, he needs to play epic music because it like, it lifts him up. And he's got this epic music playing. I've never heard it before. It was fucking awesome. And so it gets this one moment. We had just finished talking, I think on BTS at the time. I don't remember. It was a while ago. I don't know if it was BTS though.
Can't remember.
Anyway, we just finished talking about entrance music.
Yes.
And so the music is swelling and all this stuff is happening. I'm just like, man, this is so fucking awesome. That's my theme music.
Let me hum it. Uh-huh. I was at my computer and bum 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 bum.
I was like, wow, that's good entrance music. This is the one that I pick for myself. And Ian's like,
So you're going to pick that for yourself. Yeah, I'm not surprised. Do you want to know what it is?
And I was like, oh, it is already something?
It's already a thing? Yeah, it's Superman's entrance music. Amazing. Incredible.
Well, similarly, when you listen to the theme for some of the Star Trek stuff, it's like the person who wrote it, the orchestral genius.
Yes. Jerry Goldsmith for a lot of it.
It's like part of a bigger song.
Correct.
And I did not know that. Yeah, like, I just hear this part of the song.
90 seconds of an entire 8-minute thing.
So go with me here.
Okay.
What if there's a way to tie that song in with the song that you want to be part of the world, and it's just an extended version? So we're only hearing a little clip. Maybe it is the same song.
Yeah. Okay, I'm in.
You following me?
Yeah, that's how you tie it in. It is. You only get the national anthem. You just get a little bit. Okay, with that.
Pips.
Wait, Pips. 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 How many Pips, Ambassador?
Yeah, I'm going to give it 4 pips. I think it does everything needs to do. Just because I don't like baseball and I think Cisco's a dick doesn't mean that I'm going to pick. I can't fault the show for that.
No, absolutely fair.
There's so many things to enjoy about this episode, especially if you love Deep Space Nine. They do such a good job, I feel, of developing the story, even from their outfits not matched. They're in their Starfleet uniforms, then they're in mismatching uniforms, and then they come together at the end with their own uniforms. There's lots of ways that they do really good storytelling in this, with even though they suck and they're terrible at it, they do a good job of showing what team is like. They have these different characters. We get to see all these different sets. We get to have like this interesting kind of moment, and I can't fault the episode for doing that. I think they did a good job of representing baseball. Justin is a huge baseball fan. And so I've been around baseball for the last, 15 years or something, and more than I ever was before. So I've always, I'll see it and I'll hear, him talking about it. He does fantasy baseball. There's always conversation. So I knew all of the terminology and stuff. And I felt like it was fun to kind of watch them. Like when they were doing the arm thing, where they were trying to tell him to bunt.
Oh, you know? the tap on the shoulder and then the cat, and everyone's just doing it.
And they're just, and it's just fun. It's fun to watch them fuck something up that most people who like baseball are familiar enough that it's like, yeah, I know what this is. So even though my brain shut down, like a huge part of my brain shut off, I can't deny that it was a really fun episode for people who are kind of more designed for it. I don't think they did anything that was really wrong in this episode. I didn't feel like it was... I don't think they did anything that would make it be less than 4 for me. I can't think of anything that was like, man, this was really, really messed up. Even they even didn't say you have to do this during your job, because we can still assume that it was on the off hours.
Yeah, we can make that leap, which I'd never thought of before. You can make that leap. This is why I love doing the show with you. I was slightly nervous about doing a sports ball episode, but I love the respect that you have for a good story and how I could give you pretty much any genre and you'll fish out a satisfying story in there, which is really, really cool.
They just know how to write good shit.
They do. The Deep Space Nine writers were on another level. It's four pips for me as well. I love it. It's fun. I have a cognitive dissonance with how shitty Sisko is, but the payoff is fantastic for me, and I get it. We are human. We are fallible. Fine. But yeah, four pips for me. I love the heck out of this episode. And I don't like sports.
I don't either.
At all.
I don't either.
Don't like sports.
Let's watch Dungeons & Dragons together.
Let's go.
Let's play Minecraft. Yes. Let's play Baldur's Gate.
Yes.
Let's go watch
the baseball.
Yeah, let's just, like, I don't need to watch sports. I need to watch, like, Murder, She Wrote or something shitty.
Yes, let's do it.
Let's go watch Top Chef.
Yes. Okay, with that, we're not going to do any sins. We're going to go watch Top Chef. See you later, guys.
Yeah, bye.
Two to beam out.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. I will start by saying I would have loved to have brought Justin in on this podcast, Chris, Aaron, Jonathan, Jeremy, our colleagues.
Any of them would have been
fucking excellent, because I can't do the baseball sins. I've had some sent to me. I don't even know if I can read them in a way that makes sense, because I don't understand the baseball sins. But suffice to say, there are lots and lots of baseball sins in this episode. We will apply 100 sins purely to cover the baseball deficit.
Well, there you go.
Ambassador.
And yeah, basically anybody but us. Sorry about that.
Yeah, literally two worst people on the team to talk about. It's almost like we do a Star Trek show for a reason.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about it. I really didn't have a lot of sins this episode, because I feel like our conversation sometimes will answer them, or the show will answer them. So like, for example, I think one of the sins is like the Vulcans having a full Starfleet, like a Starfleet ship dedicated to Vulcans, doesn't seem right to me, but
no,
that's a quick one
on so many levels.
But like one of the silly sins that I was thinking about is when Sisko realizes that Rom somehow needs to be, you know, on the field, because that's the right thing to do, even if they lose.
Yes.
Or know that they're going to lose. They've already lost.
Exactly. Yeah.
They get dressed way too fast.
Rom, yeah.
You know, it happens so quickly. They just go to the dugout and then sneeze.
They called a time. No. Sisko goes to O'Brien and calls a timeout, and he's already dressed.
He's already dressed. Yeah, yes. It's very, very fast.
Yeah, that's
fair. And I just, those pants look very tight, you know?
Are baseball pants supposed to be tight? I don't know.
They're in stretchy fabric, but you know, you got to get those on. You got to tuck the shirt in the right way. You got to get the socks on the right way. You got to get your shoes on. You have to tie your shoes.
Yeah, you've got to get that neckline above those big Vulcan ears.
You have to make sure
that Ferengi ears and the Ferengi forehead.
Yep. You have to make sure that your buttons on the front like go down and match the
buttoned?
Seam
okay,
of your because you got to so.
There was a sin removal in the chat earlier that they have baseball caps specifically big enough for Ferengi heads.
Yeah.
Which is so great.
Yeah.
Love that.
But mostly I'm going to be in the chat for sins today.
Do it. Yeah. I have starred some absolute corkers from the live chat.
Let's go.
So my top of the list was the Starfleet Vulcans thing. Episode is an entire They Have Time for This. I know we mentioned it could be in their off hours, but it's really, really hard to pause the Dominion War when, like, I don't know if it's, I think it's a few episodes after this or at some point, they're looking at, like, casualty reports every day. They post all of the deaths every, like, in a public area. Like, it's hard to take a break and play baseball, but I know there's context for it. In, like, No Man's Land on Christmas Day, they played football between the Germans and the English. I know it happens, but it's tricky. It's tricky to take a break and do this. And it's especially tricky when the Vulcans, Solok is like, it's going to take a week to repair the warp core. Well, that sucks. Like, that's a really long time. However, there are 2 weeks of training. So, okay, that's 1 week to repair the warp core and an additional week So it's not even like, well, they can't go anywhere, so I guess they're going to be here for a week. They may as well practice. They have to choose to be there for an additional week to make this game happen as well. So there's a lot of have time for this.
Ooh, I did think of one. This one is, I'm going to say, I am 0% confident in, but I had this question and I would definitely research it. And it is a baseball thing.
Okay.
I think that Nog.
Yes.
The little kid is like, that's my dad, that guy.
Yes.
I think all he had to do was just step on home plate and he would have been out.
Somebody mentioned that in the live
chat.
If
you're touching the plate and you have the ball and they didn't touch the plate, they're out.
I think you've nailed it. I think that's right.
And so, although it is fun to watch him go down in the dugout and try to get all these very stoic characters out, and that is a funny beat.
Oh yeah.
If you watch baseball, you'll see the person that's at the home plate. They've got their foot on the plate and they've got their hand out. And as long as their foot is touching the plate and it happens before the player touches the plate, they're out. So,
I have never heard you talk about sports so much.
It's because
just
of
osmosis.
Justin.
Yeah, osmosis.
I've learned things. Anyway, I had that thought during the show. I don't know if it's
so
true
impressed.
Or not, but that's
I think
that's a sin.
I believe you.
Yeah.
Flyboy, I don't know if this is the same thing, but Flyboy has said the runner who missed the plate walks back to the dugout. By rule, he's out since he made no attempt to go back and touch the plate. No need for Nog to tag the whole team. I have no idea if that's what you just said, but there's definitely a sin in that moment that is now out in the ether.
Chat's saying, nope, it would have been a forced out if all the bases were loaded, only a runner on third. I don't know if that's... Listen to the baseball people. I'm trying.
I want some loaded jacket potatoes, some loaded loaded fries, something like that. That's all I can think about with loaded... I am starving.
Can we go eat?
Yeah, we should do that. I want a burger, but Aaron won't take me to get a burger because it's too far away.
Shit, stay focused.
Sorry, let's go. Okay, this is a great one. This is a classic, got to have the main cast sin. They hold tryouts to be on this baseball team. There is no way, especially given the level of talent that is on screen, that the space station doesn't have anybody better to be on the team. So are the tryouts, what, for just nobody? Like, just the people that we see on screen? Like, there must have been better people equipped to play baseball, more familiar with baseball, to be on the team. It is a huge coincidence that it happens to be our main cast who are the best people to be on the team. And I get it, it's a TV show, but it's a sin. Linked to that, because it is very, very linked. Nope, I've just forgotten it. Shit,
fuck. It was such a great epic thing. You were going full on Cisco.
Yeah, I went full on. It came out. They are, apart from Rom and Lita, they are all in the army. Okay? Navy, whatever. Starfleet is a professional organization in that vein. They've had to go through basic training. They've had to go through physical training.
Yes.
They fight Cardassians and Klingons and Romulans and the Jem'Hadar and the Borg. They throw phasers at each other when you're looking after someone else's cat.
But you're not supposed to throw phasers.
You're not supposed to throw phasers. They should not be this physically inept. When you see them throwing the ball to each other as limply as possible, you're adults. Like, you are adults with military training, physical training. You should not be this bad at throwing. You can be bad at the technical aspects of baseball, but you should have some hand-eye coordination.
Wow, that is really intense. You know,
really
you just expect
me.
That they're going to be good at all sports?
Not all sports. Just throwing a ball, I think, is okay.
But it's
I think
a tiny
you can
ball.
Do that. I think that makes it easier.
It's not.
I just think they should be better.
I don't know. The hard thing here is I can't say, well, then you go try because you're not in the army.
I'm not one of them. I would be bad. That's fine. I am the ROM on this team.
Slab wants to point out that half the team are civilians, so...
This is why I said excluding them, that specifically the ones in Starfleet, they should be more physically adept.
Okay, I'm going to steal one from chat. Let's go into chat. From David Sin, considering what a condescending asshole Solok, that's his name, is, Sisko shows great restraint by agreeing to play baseball against his crew and not just punching him in the face.
Amazing. That's fair. It's absolutely fair.
Here's one from Flyboy. Cisco manipulating an entire merchant fleet schedule just to get his wife in the game. Isn't there a war going on?
Completely true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, completely. I mean, I'm amazed that Cassidy puts up zero fight. Do you know how precious it is when you're both working to find time off with a loved one? And she's just like, I mean, that's love. Like, marry that woman. But I also think that she should be fighting him for some time off. This is a war.
Sin from Slab. No way this game is 10-0 in the ninth. It should have been a run ruled after the fifth.
I love that. I don't know what any of those...
It makes me sound great when I say it.
Some things up and I'll read it because it absolutely... I believe
you. Don't say that!
Yeah, I believe that that's a baseball thing. Just load up the points with the bats and shit. This is a sin sent in by Flyboy. And I really, really love this one. I hadn't noticed it. There's a Bajoran tradition where your first name is actually your last name and your second name is your given name. So Kira's name is Kira Nerys, but it would be rude to call her Nerys because that's her, what we would call a given name, like a first name. So she would be Miss Kira. Does that make sense? It's inverted to how we do it.
Yeah.
So on the baseball shirts, this is from Flyboy. The two Bajoran players have their given names, Lita and Nerys, on their uniforms, indicating that whoever made the uniforms was unaware of the Bajoran tradition of surname first, given name last. So yeah, they had Lita and Nerys on there because they would have read the cast list and said, oh, their name is Kira Nerys. So they put Nerys on the back of the shirt and it should have been Kira.
Well, that's interesting because there's a shot, I can see it, like I just looked up some stuff. There's one shot that says Kira on the back and there's another one that says Nerys on the back.
That's
so I think
amazing.
They messed it up.
They fixed it and then got it wrong. Yeah, I love that. So yeah, great eye, Flyboy, and amazed that you found that image today.
That's
amazing. So yeah, I love that because that's clearly a disconnect between the costumers and they obviously caught it at some point. So I love the nerd that caught it and offered made them do a reprint as well. Love that.
Here's a send-off from Sean for the huge baseball caps for the Ferengi.
Yeah, love that.
Here's a sin removal from Sci-Fi Brony. I appreciate that Rom has the self-awareness to know that he sucks and shouldn't be on the team and not to let that drag down the rest of the team on his behalf. I like that too. I thought that was a really interesting part of the episode. Oh. Like the whole team is ready to quit.
Yes.
And he's like, please don't. Go have fun. I really do suck.
It's one of my notes that I forgot to mention, but it is a beautiful moment. Like they could have rallied around him, but he is selfless to a fault. And he's like, no, I want my team to succeed. I want you to do this. I don't want to be the reason that you can't because I do suck. Okay. And that mutiny, a mutiny in Starfleet, everyone, would have been really interesting to see, but it would have completely changed the trajectory and it gives Cisco an opportunity to be more of a dick as well.
Sin from Slab about the holosuite that fits 20 people.
Okay, I've got something for this. This was David Ellis's episode. He sent it in. He also sent in an email with his one biggest sin and I'm going to read it and then argue with it because I disagree.
Oh, fun. This is going to be great, everybody. Oh, it's going to be great. Let me just sit back for this one.
Especially when the person on the other side of this argument isn't here to defend themselves. So I got the mic. Sorry, guys. Quark's holosuites aren't big. Say 30 feet by 30 feet, to be generous. In this episode, there are two baseball teams, 18 players.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is that on a ship or is because we're on a space station, right?
Yeah. Holosuites are bigger than holodecks.
Gotcha. Okay,
yes.
Okay.
So I think they're being David's being generous, even acknowledging that it's a holosuite and not a holodeck. There's a lot of people in a small room is what we're saying. There is no way they could be running into each other and whacking each other with balls and such, no matter how much holodeck trickery one can imagine. It's probably the single biggest holodeck sin in all of Star Trek, including Fairhaven, is a whole other thing. So I
just want to point out that the person that you're about to battle is in chat.
I love
so
it. I knew he would be.
Let's do it.
I think the lead that we've buried there is holodeck trickery. The way I understand it, and we've had this debate so many times, and I love it so much, the ground beneath you is also moving. Like, or either you're not moving, and you're on like those pads that detect your motion and then move the scenery around you. Also, if something is beyond the parameters of the holodeck, it is then projected to be further away. So you just like imagine a green screen. You then don't see the physical person. You're seeing them projected through trickery to be further and further away. And I think because everything is based on light, I think there's a way to do it. So I feel like you can, through projecting different things, have people be very, very spread apart and have lots of people in different locations and not see them all and not bumping into each other through moving the floor rotating the walls, perhaps, and projecting light trickery. I think it's possible.
Yeah.
Like a treadmill.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I get it, though. I get it. Like, you're still in a physically limited location.
Are you saying that even the ball and the bat were a holodeck?
As soon as it hit, well, that, yeah, they I think it would have to be with
so
a holographic
no
ball.
Physical ball. So I could be like 2 feet from you, but in our imaginational world, we've run 20 feet apart and I throw a ball to you. And even though we're only 2 feet away, we would both be seeing that we're actually 20 feet away in the imaginary world. And yep. So you would catch the ball in this big old fashion and somehow not smack me in the face.
Yeah, I think what happens is that in reality, you're 6 foot apart, but visually you're 30 foot apart. You throw the ball, it gets energized away, a projection replaces it to make it look further away. And then when it comes back into where it should be, it gets rematerialized where it should be in midair, and then you catch it.
I like that Captain Rebel's like, this should be on Mythbusters.
The more I'm talking about it, the less likely I think this is. I think this would be very difficult unless the holodeck is the size of a baseball.
Now I'm imagining Tom Paris telling the Doctor in Voyager that a hologram is light with no physical aspect to it, only for the Doctor to then slap him.
It's a great moment. It's so good.
That was from JCD. Here's one from Slab on this conversation. The Enterprise holodeck is bigger than the holosuite in Deep Space Nine that we see, but there may be a holosuite we don't see that's used for special occasions, weddings, baseball games, orgies, etc.
So I always assumed the holosuite didn't necessarily mean bigger, but it had a wider access to programs. And it had, like, the programming was better and more enhanced.
Yeah.
Not that they're necessarily bigger spaces.
Yeah. Andrew says, but how do you alter everyone's individual perception unless you're wearing goggles and changing it?
Oh, it's lights and mirrors.
That's the easy answer. Lights and mirrors. Everyone has to look at a very specific space on the wall, and you're just standing still in a room.
Yeah, projecting the image on the wall works. It getting rid of the person that's actually 2 feet next to you, like changing that is difficult. Removing them from your visual field is the really tricky bit.
It's not lights and mirrors, says Aids. It's just magic.
There we go. I don't know why I didn't think about that.
I really do love talking about this stuff because this is sci-fi. But there's so much of Star Trek that's attempted to be explained in like a way that we're like, yeah, this is possible.
I want everything in Star Trek to be okay, but if you had this, you could do this. The more I think about it, the more it breaks down. If you have 40 people in there, I don't know how you're not bumping into each other.
No, you would be having
physically
broken noses.
Exist. Yeah, you're physically there. Okay, that's it for our sins. Thank you, everybody who submitted sins. You can absolutely submit your own sins as well. And you can also submit what your favorite 5 episodes of Star Trek are, or any of your favorite episodes, the ones that you hold dear to your heart, not necessarily the best, not critically acclaimed, the ones that you watch to make you feel happy when you want to watch some Star Trek. You can send all of that to captainspod@cinemasins.com. You can join our lovely Discord, discord.gg/cinemasins, and go to the Captain's Pod channel, where we have a buzzing community that mainly shares memes, and it's incredible, and I love it. So next week, anybody who listened to the outtakes last week will know that I did a certain listener dirty by calling them the wrong Sarah, and I apologize to all of the Sarahs of the world. Next week, we will be doing another Sarah's episode. It's going to be back to TOS with Journey to Babel, Season 2, Episode 10. We're going from silly Star Trek into what is one of the most popular episodes of the original series. Yeah, Journey to Babel, Season 2, Episode 10. And until then, I'm Captain Ian, and it's death to the opposition from me.
Oh, no. Yeah, and it's that man is going to get a painful lesson in humanity from me.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
I don't even know if I have Deep Space Nine as an intro. That's amazing.
That's amazing. We're also live. They can hear. Hi, everybody. Hi. We don't know what we're doing today.
Wait, are we not muted? I thought we were muted. No. Oh, okay.
That's fine.
They're going to love this.
Yes, yeah, this is great.
I can hear them laughing about it now.
This is why you come to the live show.
Hang on a minute. Deep Space Nine, Deep Space Nine, Deep Space Nine.
Do you have a button?
I have no Deep Space. I can't believe I forgot to put Deep Space Nine up there.
Let's just do our own music.
Let's just pick one. Keep circling.
We can literally just talk to each other. We're in the same room.
Interesting.
We're in the same room. We have our microphones in the same board.
I can see one of your eyeballs.
Shut up.
The other one is blocked by a ring light that you refuse to move.
I don't.
And I get to see your immediate eye rolls in person. Amazing.
Mr. Whittington.
Whittington. Oh, teaching Iris to say Whittington. And why it was important as well.
I really feel like one way that I can just get back to you is just to tell her to say Whittington.
Whittington?
No, there's no T's, just all D's. Whittington.
Whittington. Yeah, no, I wouldn't hold that against her. For two reasons. One, it goes badly and she feels guilty.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Two, it goes well and she does it even more.
Yeah.
No reaction is best, just neutral.
You also can't blame her.
Watch me.
For what I did.
Yes, exactly.
That's the number one reason.
No, but I can blame her for peer pressure. And being pressured by her mother into doing something that deep down she knows is wrong.
And those are my things. Behind his head are like all my old electronics. And then on the other side is a little, Careful with that.
I'm a cat.
Careful with that.
You come over here and stop me. No. I don't know where the kid is, but we do have an animal story. Because that happened since last week.
Let's just say that we have decided that it may be best to have like a little kill count board with information on it updated whenever there's a new cat activity situation. Ian thought it was a rat.
I did honestly thought it was a rat. I thought it was a really fat rat.
And why did you think it was a rat?
Because it didn't have a head. So it was hard to specify exactly what species the animal was as it had been decapitated.
It was a little baby bunny. You know how some families will have like the little logos on the back of their car, the little decals. It'll talk about like the kids, what sex the child is, their animals. Like, I think we need to do one of those. But then there's birds, there's size of bird, and then there's the escaped bird, and then there's the mystery one that we're pretty sure escaped, but we're not entirely sure. There's the one that almost escaped but then died, and now we have a bunny. So.
I had to retrieve this bunny. And put it in a bag and take it away.
You did. I did not feel bad asking you to do that. But afterwards, I thought maybe I had over-assumed what the responsibilities that you want to have while you're here.
I didn't even question it. You just like, can you deal with this? And I was like, okay. And as I was mid-scooping, I was like, why am I doing this and not doing whatever job Danae was about to do?
I love this comment from David earlier. I'm guessing Danae doesn't get a lot of repeat house guests if they're on dead rat detail.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Ian, are you busy? Can you please come handle this?
Nope, I'm in England.
Thanks for joining us for the live taping of Captain's Pod podcast.
Taping.
Yeah, it's a new word I'm trying out. I did just watch an episode of Murder, She Wrote. And it was a murder that happened in a recording studio. And it was like all the old school equipment and stuff. And all of these like cassette tapes that were...
Was it recorded? Was that part of the plot?
The recording did come into part of the plot. Yes.
Was it, I'm going to kill you. I think he did it.
Okay, let me quickly explain what Star Trek is to Pojo.
Oh, this will be good.
It's an imaginary place.
Nope. I have a rebuttal. I have an argument against that. It's not imaginary.
It's an imaginary show in the realm of star travel, space travel, space exploration, space wars, space species, intersexual experiences between species, a complete annihilation of species, and pretty much one person's initial idea of what the future could be like that was then manipulated in new ways once they died. And then more people decided what the future would look like.
Yes. Pretty good.
Thank you.
Pretty solid. Wandering says, you need... this is a baseball sin that could be right, but I don't understand it. You need O'Brien to anchor the second half of the lineup? Question mark. What? Anchoring the second half of the lineup is not a thing.
I like anchors.
Get it.
Sin from Slab, another score sin. Score should have been 100-1 to 0, not 10-1.
Sounds great. I agree.
CDR, this is a good point. You have to wonder if the Vulcan captain had been planning this for ages. He had his staff trained. He had a holo program made. There is no need to do any of that. Logic dictates that this activity is superfluous. I love that word. On an all Vulcan ship.
He lessoned himself into playing a human game.
May I suggest, says Andrew, if you're still here, an ox venture for your next D&D podcast show.
What's
yes,
an
you
ox
may.
Ox venture. Ooh.
Ox venture. I'm looking it up now. Oh, look at this crew of happy people. God, that's the kind of friends I want to have right there. Look at those guys.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Okay, let's see what it says. Oxventure, a British YouTube channel dedicated to the ongoing adventures of the Oxventures Guild, which has been spun off from Outside Box and Outside Extra, featuring their ongoing campaigns of Dungeons, Dragons, and Blades in the Dark, performed by this group of people.
Love it.
It began in 2017.
Ian, it would be a dream if you ever guested on Oxventure. Question. Dream for you, them, or me? Because they may hate it.
Why not me, Andrew?
Yeah, Danae. Yeah.
God. Off the screen. You want to go into the chat and see if there's any of those that you want to throw up on the screen?
Ian, what is a balk?
A balk?
A balk. I don't know. Should I know what a balk is?
Yeah, it's a term. It's a baseball term.
Oh, okay. I'm going to read it.
No. Just guess what it is.
Oh, guess what it is. Yeah. A balk.
How about this? Is it legal?
No, I've got... Okay, no. Go on. Is it legal or illegal? Mm-hmm. Give us some context, JCD.
No, don't do it, JCD.
A balk is a ball that has been hit so far over the stands.
Just launched it.
You're just like, man, that...
So it's a foul ball.
It's gone for a walk.
It's a foul ball then?
It's gone for a balk. It's a foul.
Okay.
It's so far in the clouds that it's a balk.
But it's over the crowd, so that means it's behind.
But it has to have ricocheted off of somebody in the crowd.
Oh, shit. Okay, so we're killing people today.
Well, it depends on how hard you hit it.
So it's a foul ball that hits somebody in the stand and then keeps going.
And keeps going beyond the stand, yeah.
Now you know, guys.
That's what it is. Facts.
The more you know.
Baseball facts. So a balk, in its simplest term, is when a pitcher does something outside their normal pitch setup and windup to try and throw off the batter. When that happens, the base runner advance. Wait, what? When that happens, the base runners advance a base? So they're not allowed to change how they pitch a ball, or else they concede a base?
Let's go back to
this. That's insane. Ow, fuck. Jesus.
What just happened?
It pinged and hit me in the head.
I don't know how to use headphones.
Fuck you. Fuck.
I thought we were friends.
No, fuck off.
Why would you say that?
Fuck off.